I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing, and thank you for leaving me reviews on iTunes. As always, it's very much appreciated. Now, today's guest is a very rare type of guest indeed. In fact, since I started doing this podcast, nearly 2 years ago now, I've always wanted to speak to one particular type of person, and that was the agents, the people behind the scenes, the people who are in charge of making a lot of things tick. Thankfully, I've now found an agent that has been willing to come on and talk to me. So, I'm not going to make you wait any longer. Here is this week's interview. Well, I'm delighted to be joined by a player agent, and the only player agent that's ever agreed to speak to me, Tom Beattie. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you, JB. Very well indeed. Busy time at the moment in the market. But, you know, that's just the way it is. And in terms of my position currently, you know, I'm speaking to clubs, players, you know, registered who are on board with TDB Sports, the agency, day in, day out, and that's all part of it and all fun at the same time, and mapping out their futures, whether that be staying at the clubs that they're currently contracted to or potentially looking at new options.
Excellent. So what is the yearly cycle of an agent then?
Well, this is where now the recruitment world is, it's become a bit of a 24/7, 365 year industry in that sense. Mm-hmm. And I say that because rugby, in my eyes, rugby union is 21 years young.
Yes,
as a pro sport, and I know it's ever changing. You know, obviously there's been an inflation in the market in terms of salaries, not only in England, obviously in the Viva Prem, but also in the Pro 14 as well. You've seen guys like Johnny Sexton go out to Racing Metro and then return, you know, because of the opportunity financially as well as on the field with Leinster and the Irish Rugby Union. Mm-hmm. And then you've got France, haven't you? Now, France is always going to be a market that is an attraction for a player, a marquee player or... a player who potentially is not involved in international rugby, who wants to try something different in a different environment. But it's all down to a lot of it's to do with the visa permutations in terms of, especially if you're an overseas player, can you qualify to get a visa to play in England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales? But also on the flip side of that, what you've got in France now, for example, is you've got the Laporte rule that's just kicking in, which is a case of less foreign players being allowed to sign for the French clubs. And there's a shift there in terms of the percentage of French to foreign, mm-hmm. which is making the market that much more difficult, especially if you're a non-French qualified player. So the market, like, to kind of answer your question, is ever-changing,
yes.
which makes it interesting from my point of view. Sort of managing expectations of the player, but also it also makes it quite an exciting industry to work in as well.
That's quite interesting because when you talk about the French rule, I assume that means that there's going to be quite a lot of pressure on, say, English players and Welsh players or people in the UK as these foreign players can no longer get the necessary squad places over in the top 14.
Well, that's, and the Pro de Deux as well, which is a very, very good league.
Mm.
The French Pro Division 2 is, you've got guys like Perpignan in there, Grenoble, Biarritz, Bayonne. You know, these are big clubs in that league, all battling to try and get out there and retain their status in top 14. Yeah. You've got a lot of quality overseas players playing their trade with those clubs, and earning a good living. And in terms of where that is now in France, with the Laporte rule, I call it, it's currently within the match day 23s for top 14 and Pro de Deux. 14 out of the 23 have to be French qualified players.
Wow.
Okay. It's going to kick on to 15 next season, 16 the year after, and then eventually it's going to get to 17. Now, I believe that it's going to stay at 17. So that is a big shift in the recruitment market, the movement market, whatever you want to call it, especially for overseas players, which are classed as English, Scottish, Irish, Welsh.
I see.
You know, they are overseas players. You know, they don't fit, obviously, the French rules. So is there going to be the opportunity still for the marquee guys potentially down the line, the guys like Owen Farrell, George Ford? You've seen Finn Russell obviously go out now to Paris next year. In the key positions, I think there always will be a value there.
Yeah.
Your tight end props, your ball-carrying number eights, and your goal-kicking fly halves, guys with a flair like Finn, obviously. I think there always will be a market for those guys to earn the big bucks, as it were, out in France. But it's going to be a lot harder for guys perhaps not in that key position to get the kicks over there.
So,
David Strettel. David Strettel, perfect example.
Oh, yeah, of course it is.
The Saracens.
And do you think that's one of the reasons because of the Laporte rule?
100%, JB, 100%, because... Now, I believe David was enjoying his time out there. He's certainly been performing well.
Yeah.
And, he's returning to a great club, though, isn't he, in Saracens? Because they really...
yeah,
I met him there yesterday, and they really look after the players. So he's going home, as he's talked about there, in the press release. And to be honest, it's great for him to perhaps finish his career at a great club. But at the same time, it's a situation whereby, perhaps... I don't represent David, but perhaps his market value did drop slightly in France because of being a non-French player, which actually meant it was being an EQP player, he was more attractive to come back to a Saracens as an English qualified player fitting their quota.
I guess from a personal point of view, it's a great landing spot for him too.
Oh, great. Great for him, great for his family. It's just a great club. They're a pleasure to deal with. They are a forward-thinking club. Great set of coaches and a club that really manages to break new boundaries in terms of how they look after players. So, from my point of view, if you've got a chance for a player to go there, it's always going to be a big consideration to look at Saris. I call them the Man United of rugby in that sense, in terms of if Saris come calling, you're always going to consider them.
You've got to go. Well, let's just go back.
Not necessarily go, but give
them
the option.
Yes, quite.
Give them the option.
Well, let's just go back a step. Not many people, or I'm sure, well, I don't think many people, can go to university and then come out the other side as a rugby agent. So what is your... what's your background then? How do you end up doing a job which I think many, many people at least think they would like?
That's a really good question, JB. And to be honest, whether it's a bit of luck, whether it's a bit of fortune, I believe you've got to make your own luck, by the way. But from my point of view, I grew up in the rugby world. My brother Ross Beattie, mm-hmm. Played for Northampton Saints, Newcastle, and two stints, Bristol Shoguns at the time as captain, and also was lucky enough to represent Scotland at the Rugby World Cup 2003. So I was brought up naturally around top pro rugby, which allowed me to build relationships both with players at that time, but also build the links with the clubs in terms of the guys that had the recruitment up, the academies, the CEOs, etc. And what I call it's the black book. It's the black book scenario. You build up your black book.
Yeah.
And I was able to, at the end of Ross's career, have that opportunity to represent him. So I did his final deals in his career to go back to Newcastle Falcons, where he wanted to go and play his beloved club, having been at the board of Reavers in Scotland, who you may remember were disbanded by the Scottish Rugby Union.
I remember them.
and then his final deal to Ross's final deal to go to Nice, who had the likes of Dan Luger there at the time, Kevin Yates, Martin Johnson's brother as well, Will Johnson, who was heavily involved as player coach.
Oh, sorry, Leith.
Did
you say Leith then?
Nice.
Neath, as in Neath in Wales.
The beautiful Neath in Côte d'Azur.
Oh, right, not Neath in South Wales. Neath, right, yeah, I'm with you.
That was something that we looked at. That was something we looked at, JB, but it was kind of a flip of the coin. Did Ross go to Nice in the south of France, you know, or did he go to Nice? And we decided that at the time Nice was going to be the move.
Very nice. I was going to say, when on earth did Dan Luger play for Neath?
He did. he played for Nice. Sorry, not Nice, yeah. Friend. But Luke, no, he's a great guy, Dan. He's Monaco based now, as is Ross, actually.
Oh, really?
Has moved on into the health and fitness world. So that's what that opportunity allowed him. That's a big part of what I do, actually. A big part of my role is not only what the players do within if they have a 10 to 12 year career as a pro,
yeah,
that's a great career. In my opinion, that's a great career.
Because a lot of
injury involved, obviously. Form fitness, as it were. And so that's a great career. And to be able to then offer a player the opportunity from a transition point of view into life after rugby, that's a big part of my offering. I've been lucky in that, in terms of a corporate background that I worked in before getting involved as an agent officially 5 years ago. So 5.5 years ago now. So... the Nice worked really well because it allowed Ross to set up his personal training business, and now, you know, with backing, he's now actually set up a private members sports facility called 39 Monte Carlo.
Nice,
yeah, in sunny Monaco.
That's absolutely brilliant.
It's a great story, but that's, you know, you've got to make those opportunities happen, as you know, in life, haven't you? And I guess those guys like Dan's working in finance out there, you've got to make these opportunities happen as well, haven't you?
Yeah, completely agreed. Now, when people think of agents, it's often a dirty word because I think they think of, you know, Neymar's dad selling his rights to, you know, Paris Saint-Germain or some such thing. So what exactly does it entail to be an agent?
That's a really good question. We're the necessary evil, aren't we, JB? I think that's what we've been describing.
Well, look, I in my day job sell pensions, so I know all about the necessary evil job. You don't need to tell me about it.
Yeah. Look, from my point of view, it's how you view it is case by case as an individual, and I see myself as a player manager.
Yeah.
Who happens to obviously get involved very much so in the negotiation process, giving the player the best chance and best opportunities to have the best career. So I have their best interests at all times in place because for me, from my point of view, is I try and think what it would be like if it was the other way around, if I was a player and what I would want from the player manager agent. Mm-hmm. Okay. And everyone's case by case, everyone's an individual, aren't they? They've got their own qualities and they've got their own outcomes in terms of what they want to achieve. So that, for me, it's about aligning goals with what that player wants to achieve,
yeah,
and working towards that end in its simplest form. And, you know, but at the same time, how it works is, as you know, if you do your bit on the field as a player, you know, it makes things that much more fluid to do the work off the field as the player manager agent. And that's the way I see it. It's a two-way relationship, very much. Is you do your business on the field, and I'll do it off it.
Yeah.
And but it's that continuous, not only looking at what's the best opportunity for the player to progress, but also it's actually that personal relationship with the player, which is what's going on in your life. You know, you're happy with how things are going, you know, off the field, and because I think that plays such a big part in how they perform on the field.
Yeah. Now, I guess the awkward part for you is every day you work with these guys, you probably talk to your clients, what, every other day at least?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of every player is different in terms of how they like to communicate. You know, some of the guys like to just do simple WhatsApp messages, catch up, et cetera. Some people want more FaceTime. So it's just case by case. And I think, from my point of view, you just adapt to that and, give them the best advice you possibly can.
So when you're talking to the clubs, you're obviously selling these guys, people you've got quite a deep personal interest in. It must be hard for you to turn around and have the other conversation. And I'll give an example. I don't mean to say that this isn't a judgment on this player's ability whatsoever, but someone say like James Haskell, who is getting a lot of money at Wasps, you might have to turn around to him and say, you know what, maybe you should lower your expectations. That must be a very hard conversation to have.
It is, because, you know, very much so, because everyone's different. You know, I've mentioned that a lot here, that everyone's different, but it really is the case, because some people, you know, have a real ego on them, and you have to have a little bit of that. You really have to have self-belief as a pro sportsman to be the very best you can. Mm. And sometimes, as the player manager agent, you have to manage that ego a little bit and massage it a little bit. But also there comes that point, and it is a difficult conversation, but it's a real conversation. And that's what I say to the guys is, look, this is the reality, okay? And obviously, you've got the choice of how to deal with that reality, which is there is the opportunity at this club or your current club or another club. Actually, there isn't. And you know, what we've got to do is work together to you know, get you the very best opportunity as a player to kick on from that. And everyone deals with disappointment in a different way. But the way I see it is, you can sink or swim.
Yeah,
you know, and it's dead simple. You can actually use that disappointment as motivation, or unfortunately, you can go the other way, which is, you know, perhaps not kick on with your career. And I think it's tough when to have those difficult conversations, JB, to sum it up, but at the same time, unfortunately, at times, you know, it has to be done.
How important is talent evaluation in your role?
Talent ID is crucial. I mean, it's about work. It goes back to the black book, which is having guys in that black book who know players and know quality from a young age. The key with rugby now is the academies. Every club's got to get the academy right, in my opinion. You get your academy right, and then you're able to recruit good players outside of that. You've got a winning formula. So from my point of view, it's about identifying, working with key scouts, you know, that I have relationships with around, you know, not only the UK but also globally and rugby player nations, to identify that potential player that could come through and be really successful as a pro player. So, it's massively important in terms of how the player's screened.
Yeah,
you know, I was in Cape Town before Christmas, luckily enough, for Dimitri Katsoukalis' wedding, who I represent at Harlequins. Top man, Dimitri.
How is he getting on with
it? Was.
Sorry, how is he getting on with his injury?
It was a real shock, and I was at the game with his dad against Gloucester in September time. Yeah, it wasn't nice. It wasn't nice to see, because, you know, you got that bond with the player. The guy's a great guy and great family, and, you know, it's a throat injury. He's recovering well from it, really well from it. He's a really positive guy. And, you know, it's a watch this space thing in terms of his return to play. He'll come back when it's right, and that's been managed so well by Harlequins and the medical staff there. It's been fantastic with Dimitri from day one, and I would personally like to thank Harlequins for all their efforts. It's been very good.
That's really good to hear. Sorry, I interrupted your answer about talent ID there.
I think I was about to interrupt you as well there, buddy. But look, so I had the pleasure of meeting up with Ernst Schubert, if you remember, the Saris, number 8. He was very successful winning trophies with Saris. Now, since his retirement, he's returned back to SA, South Africa, and he's actually heading up the Stellenbosch Academy. And it's phenomenal. I think it's Johan Rupert, the owner of Saracens, that's behind the behind it in terms of finance. Yeah, and it is phenomenal. Like the players can go out there at a young age and be totally screened in terms of, you know, where they're currently at and where they can be in terms of you know, their player development. You know, everything from a conditioning, nutrition, etc., to giving them a real pathway that will allow clubs to understand the type of player that may be coming on board. And now it was great. And I think what I said to Ernst is what a great platform that you've got here for guys to kick on. And there's a lot more of that now throughout the world. You know, that's just one example. You know, a lot of it happens in New Zealand. Well, obviously, you know, so I think England are really now starting to get ahead of the curve as well with especially with the academies, in terms of the junior academies, so guys that are still at school or in the ACER colleges, giving them that opportunity to kick on and experience what pro rugby is all about.
Well, what are your views on academies such as the Montpellier Academy, which is based in South Africa? Because people will turn their nose up a bit and say, hang on, are you not just taking the best and brightest from South Africa to get them qualified for a different nation or to get them into XYZ club, which might not be South African?
That's really interesting. You've just told me something that perhaps I didn't know about. So, Montpellier is a massive club, as we know, and there has been some South Africans that have gone over there and been very successful, as we know. You know, the Duplessis brothers are there at the moment.
Well, Dimitri was there, was he not?
Dim came over from there, obviously, for the start of pre-season this season, so in July last year, and having a great time. They loved it there. Big club. And Altrad, great owner, really, really good guy, really positive guy. And, he won the European Challenge there as well, ironically beating Harlequins in the final, if you recall. So, they have had the strong link with South Africa. Obviously, Jake White was there as well at the time before Vern Cossa's come in, now, as you know. So, look, for there's different ways of skinning a cat, isn't there? Your key is getting the very best recruitment, getting the very best players on the pitch, as well as having a strong academy. So every club's got a different way of doing things and have a different outcome in terms of what they want to achieve. And that's what makes it really interesting in my job, because no club's the same. And I think, the more relationships they can have, I guess, like Montpellier, Toulon's, Brive have had a strong link out in Fiji, I believe, over the years. To try and have that point of difference is something that clubs are always trying to achieve.
Now, as you're... in your life as an agent, when are you allowed to start talking to players coming through academies? Is there a process for it? Is there some sort of, I'm trying to think, like young player symposium where they meet lots of agents, or is it just a one-to-one who you know?
Look, we're regulated as agents, as official agents,
okay,
by the RFU, as RFU agents. So there's a different process, etc., that goes through that in terms of the registration, in terms of how you regulate it, etc., which is on an annual basis. And it works really well. The RFU have put a really good system in place with the ARA, the agents association that's headed up by Tony Copsey. And I think in terms of what you've just said there in terms of the young, it's very much a process of, from my point of view, in terms of the way I do things, which is very much parent-driven involvement,
Yeah.
From my point of view, I totally get it as a parent, which would be like, well, what's this guy wanting from my son?
Yeah.
Especially if they're a 16, 15, 16-year-old. And I don't tend to sign any player when they're...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The age of 15 or 16. Some agents might do that with parental and guidance, which has to be part of it in terms of any contractual side of things, especially when they're 16 upwards. But I don't tend to do that because I feel, when they're an adult, which is 18, that is the 17, 18 in terms of parental guidance, still heavily involved, is the right time for them to get representation. But I think they need to have it because I think it protects them, it protects both, all parties. I'm not saying that clubs will exploit a young player or any player, but it protects you from that in terms of having another voice. And I think from my point of view, I'm very, very keen on making sure that the player is protected from a young age, so that they give them the very best chance of going through the pathway and being successful.
So when is your preference to get hold of a player? 18? Something like that, when they've kind of got into a club?
I will have conversations with the parents and the guardians and the player perhaps before the age of 18.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I say, it's case by case. There's a couple of guys. If I don't speak to these players, let's put it in black and white, if I don't speak to these players and give TDB Sports the very best chance of representing some of this talent, then someone else will.
Yeah.
You know? So it's one of those ones where, you know, it has to be treated delicately and with respect to the, you know, the parents of the player and the player themselves. But if I'm building relationships from the age of 15 up to 18, that's fine without any contract in place. But I think when they get to 18 or pushing 18, I think that's the right time to get something done for me.
Now, with the influx of money into the UK game, in particular the English game, actually, you've been around for a fair bit of time now. Are you noticing the agency market getting a bit more competitive, a bit more? I won't say professional because I think everyone's been professional, but the organisations are certainly getting bigger.
Look, I had this conversation a while ago with Scott Johnson. Who's the head of the director of rugby of Scottish Rugby, and he came down to the agents conference, and he said, "Geez, there seems to be an inflation of agents here." And I think he was absolutely on the money, in the sense that there seems to be an increase, because I think it goes back to the point that you mentioned earlier about the process of becoming an agent. And it, you know, some people might see it as quite a sexy role, you know, being a player agent, whether that be in rugby, football, you know, cricket, whatever that sporting discipline may be. And I think there's a big, you know, there's definitely some truth to that, but the reality is there's a lot of work behind the scenes that some people don't see, like any job really, that perhaps isn't as sexy. But you know, I think in terms of the market, is there too many agents for players in terms of the amount of players? I think we're getting to a point where there probably is. You know, in that sense, perhaps there probably is. I mean, that's not something I want to, you know, say is set in stone. And, you know, I think the way I see things is in terms of competition or other agencies or whatever is, look, all I can do and all TDB can do is do the very best for our players.
Yeah.
And we hope that the players will be happy as a result. And so we don't tend to concentrate on what other guys are doing, because that's up to them. But we just say to our players and guys, we will work really hard for you. So we will give you everything, the opportunity to be the very best you can be. And that's really all we can do. And that involves a negotiation, but also off field in terms of, you know, liaison with the coaching staff at their current clubs.
So anecdotally, you're not finding the increase in agents, meaning that occasionally you get a phone call from one of your guys saying, "Hey, I've just had you know, Global Bro Sport or someone on the line asking if I'm represented," that sort of thing.
Hey, look, that's a really interesting question. It does happen. I can't say it doesn't happen, because it does. I'm not going to mention any agencies that have done it. Or any individuals, because I don't feel that's correct to do that.
Yeah.
But it does happen, and some players' heads get turned, by the way, and you know, some of the things that are said to the player are interesting, because, you know, they get fluffed a little bit in the nicest possible way.
Yeah.
They get told that they're worth more than they're on now, salary contract wise, and you know. They get told that they can be the face of Adidas or the face of, you know, Nike or whatever. And I think there's some players who will fall for it and say, actually, I want to go and work or be represented by that agent.
Yeah.
And some players will actually see past that and say, actually, I'm not sure you can do that for me, and I'm quite happy with my current representation.
Yeah,
you find out about people, don't you, though, in the nicest possible way, without being too critical. You find out about people in terms of, you know, who they are.
Yeah.
And has it happened? Yes, it has happened. You know, it has happened, and some of the players have fallen for it. And good luck to them, is the way I see it, because you know, it's a small industry. And I just say, look, good luck to you. You know, if, especially if they're out of contract, if they're out of contract with you as an agency, then obviously they're free to go and join another agency. It's the ones that you sometimes, where they play, what you want to call it, have been tapped up or misrepresented. That's where it gets a little bit tricky.
Yeah, I guess in a salary cap situation as well, there's not really that much room for improvement. You've either got the deal, which is market value, or you haven't. And clubs actually can't afford to overspend.
Look, it's come to a point now, JB, which, and I had this conversation with the director of rugby earlier, and it's come to a point now where actually there's a little bit of realism after the last couple of years, because a lot of clubs have, without mentioning names of clubs, which is not right, I think have maybe overspent a little bit, not gone over the salary cap as such, not gone over the salary cap at all, but perhaps, because you've got to look at it, and you look at it as a business, haven't you? You've got to look at it as, what is our revenue? What do you actually bring into this business? Well, if you look at the Premiership clubs, they're looking to get the BT monies, which is huge for a club. They get the RFU funding, which is huge, you know. If they're lucky, because it's a tough competitive market, the sponsorship world, they have a really good sponsor who, you know, is really supportive in terms of what monies they put into the club as well. And then obviously you've got your gates and your merchandise sales, etc. You know, some of the clubs, they're in a good position in terms of they're sustainable. They've got, you know, those revenue streams working really, really, really well. Whereas some of them haven't. So as a result, if you're, you know, it's an inflation in player wages, and you've got more going out than coming in. When does that stop? Because you look at London Welsh, but in the scenario in the league below, in the Champ, you know, they have to start again. They went bust basically. And what we've got to be careful, I think what clubs are now realising is actually, well, maybe this year we've got to rein it in a little bit. So does that make it harder if you're out of contract as a player? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because perhaps this year's not the best year to be out of contract.
That's actually really interesting, because I guess it's only Exeter that are currently making money. There might be another one somewhere, but as far as I know, it's only Exeter.
Look, I mean, Exeter. I mean, we've talked, you know, I know you've interviewed Don Armand.
Yes, I have.
Great guy. Yeah, what a player. I'm biased, but what a player. you know, so I'm in touch with Don a lot, and I speak to Rob Baxton, and actually met Tony Rowe after the Glasgow game this week. I went up to watch Glasgow versus Exeter. And, you know, it's an inspiring story, what they've done at Exeter. But it's kind of chance and opportunity, in the sense that there's not really a lot else going on sporting-wise in Exeter. I think there's a football team there, isn't there? And they've got but they've got a really strong university that feeds into the academy, Exeter. And they've also, from the foundations of a club, the foundations in terms of what they've done is phenomenal, you know, and it's a really organic club in terms of its growth and its support from not only the people of Exeter, but also the corporates and, you know, the partners that they have. It's a really good model. You know, you've got your David Lloyd on site next door, you know, you've got it all under one roof in terms of the actual Sandy Park Centre, which is used really, really well for conference and banqueting throughout the week. And it's a really good model. And I think a lot of clubs can't necessarily follow that model because of ownership of land and what they don't own.
Yes.
But with Exeter, they've got a really good model because of everything around the club that allows them to be a sustainable business.
Now, you just spoke briefly about maybe a bit of player wage contraction. Now, just imagine the scenario, which you have pretty much every year. Players coming up for contract negotiations, or you're looking for a new club. Without giving away all the state secrets, what sort of things do you do to build a case to put forward to the director of rugby? I mean, is it as far as, you know, building all his video highlights with commentary and statistics? What is the process?
You've just hit the nail on the head a little bit at the end there, actually, JB, because, you know, especially if it's a player that's potentially looking to move on to another club, they want to see footage. They want to see, you know, the qualities of that player, what could potentially add to their group of players, you know, their profile, which the word profile gets talked about a lot in sport. You know, what is their profile and how will that profile fit into what we're all about? And you know, that profile, you know, is obviously vision in terms of seeing what they can or perhaps can't do and what needs to be worked on, etc., and how that you know, how that's managed. But also it's, yeah, you know, you, everything from, and it goes back to what I talked about there about the Ernst Schubert scenario with Selimovic in terms of screening of a player.
Yeah.
So in terms of where they're at with their fitness levels, where they're at with their strength levels, where they're at with, you know, their development as a specimen, as it were.
Yeah.
You know, and in terms of that due diligence that a club does, every club does it slightly differently, but it's now become so much more a big factor in terms of a club won't sign a player blind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anymore, regardless of references that they might get from some key people within the game about the player. They want to see the player either live or through footage highlights, games, recorded games that are able to be viewed, etc.
That's interesting.
And, you know, so that's for a player potentially moving on. For a player currently at their club and looking to be retained, mm-hmm. then, you know, obviously it depends on how well they've gone within that season or the last or a couple of seasons of their contract.
So do you find yourself taking directors of rugby or scouts over to games of players that are out of contract just because they want to go and watch them?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I think in terms of the that situation, there's always that happening. And sometimes a player doesn't know it's happening. And then sometimes you'll get a phone call of a director of rugby or a chief scout, whatever, and say, you know, I watched Johnny the other day and I thought he was, you know, was very, very good, or actually perhaps he needs to work on this before we'd consider, you know, certain areas of his game before we would consider potentially, you know, offering him a contract to go to that club. So, yeah, there's a lot of unseen due diligence that goes on, and that makes it quite interesting, actually, when you get these phone calls or you make these phone calls and you hear that the player that you represent has been watched.
Excellent. And I imagine it's all horses for courses too. So, you know, if you're selling someone Steve Diamond, send them all of your players rolling mauls. And if you're sending them to Aaron Major, make sure it's lots of slick hands.
Yeah, no, every coach, director of rugby wants something different. You know, just because one club might say to you, well, we don't rate that player or we don't want that player type of player, doesn't mean that the club down the road will say the same thing, by the way.
Yeah.
And it's just opinion. It's opinion, and actually, that player, how they get him. I've heard so many different opinions on one player at times. You think, wow, this is incredible. And you kind of have to take a step back and actually think, you know, who's right and who's potentially wrong here in terms of their opinions. But I'm not sure it comes to that. It's actually case by case, because every whether it be scout, director of rugby, head coach, whatever you want to call it, or academy manager, has in their eyes what they're looking for, and perhaps that player doesn't always fit that. Whereas another, you know, a club down the road, as it were, might think actually that's what we're looking for, and that player does fit that. So, say case by case.
Now, what are the directors of rugby like to work with? Are they relatively open with you about what they want and when they want it? Are these decisions, which, you know, obviously as fans we don't get to see, are they driven mostly by, you know, the fit into the scheme of the club, or is it just who is available right now? Who can we sign?
Yeah, I mean, the relationship you have with the director of rugby is key in terms of recruitment, in terms of being able to best represent your players that you know currently, you know, under your banner as an agency. But also, you know, it may well be a case that actually a director of rugby says, look, I want to sign a world-class tight end next year. Do you have any? Well, you know, or can you speak to your partners globally to try and find that individual? And, you know, that happens quite a lot. So it may be a case of actually me going to my partners in South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Argentina, you know, Japan even, and actually saying, look, this is the profile that the club want. Do you have that player that can fit that profile and make a real impact?
Oh, I see.
And that's, you know, it's about the global network, JB. I think I mentioned earlier, it's about the Black Book global network. And that comes through time in terms of just building relationships, and harnessing them.
And how are the DORs to deal with? Have you got any in particular that you really like to deal with?
They're all fantastic, JP.
Every last one of them, equally as fantastic as the next.
Amazing. They're a joy to deal with. All of them.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to ask you just a couple more questions and I'll let you get on with your evening. But I'm fascinated to know, because we started with Talent ID, or at the very start we had a bit of a chat about it. How did you find a player the quality of Don Armand? Because before he was over here, I'd never heard of him. He had a handful of caps at the Stormers. And as far as I'm concerned, one of the best back rows in the country. In fact, we dedicate about 10 minutes per podcast to him. Every egg chasers. So how did that relationship come about?
Look, I think it's a point I mentioned earlier, which, you know, in terms of relationships with global partners, and one of the things that I did when I started out as an agent was very much look at the market and say, how can I offer something different, bring something different to the market, rather than just be the same as every other agent? And one of the things I realised was actually, you know, if you look at the game globally, you look at South Africa, you look at New Zealand, Australia, there are going to be a number of quality players within those countries who are qualified to play for England, Scotland, Ireland, Wales.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So I went to build a relationship with Asian partners, and I built one with a organisation in South Africa called Insight Management. Now, Insight Management were actually the guys that were representing Oscar Pistorius at the time.
Okay,
but they had a rugby division, and which included Don and a guy called Stephen Canoe, who's a fantastic guy, who was Don's agent in South Africa. Really great guy. I think he's in Ireland now, and he's not working the player management game, but he's in Ireland, I think, coaching. I think a really, really good guy, and you know, built a relationship with Stephen or Canoe, Snoop, I think, and. And Don, we had opportunities because he was at the Stormers, but he was English qualified, so he was a grandparent. So that really meant that I was able to get his profile in the nicest possible way and go to the clubs over here. And we had various offers on the table. So he had a situation where he had to decide which club he went to. And Rob Baxter, you know, open and honest guy, you know, as he is, you know, had those conversations with Don about Exeter and about the plan and the vision and how Don potentially could fit into that plan. And it was a case of doing that deal, working with Stephen at the time.
Fantastic. Right, well, I'm going to give you two last questions, okay? And then you can get on with your evening and representing your players. But... give me one thing you'd like to see the agency market doing better, and one thing you'd like to see it stop doing, or at least do less of.
I think there's two things. I think as agents, we need to be protected more by the clubs in that sense. Because what I mean by that is the players are very well protected in terms of their contracts that they have with the clubs. Both in terms of health insurance, etc., and they have that option to also take extra insurance out as well, which is something that I recommend to all my players. For career ending, as an example. So obviously, if a player had to stop playing rugby tomorrow and they had their career ending insurance in place, they'd get a certain amount of monies for a period of time, which would help them move on to the next phase of their life. Well, from our point of view as agents, we've got fees in place with clubs that are fixed in. We've done all that work to get that player there. Suddenly that player has to stop playing rugby. We don't get paid any more of the fees.
I see, yeah.
And you kind of think, well, actually, how can you build a business in terms of planning, etc., to ensure that? And it's for me, I think there needs to be a bit of perhaps a consideration from the clubs working with the agents. Actually, we'll help protect you as well as the player. So that's something to be able to, you know, continue to build your business in the most positive way, and also for your time, the work you're putting in, and in terms of you know, going forward. You know, it's interesting to see what might happen in the agency game, you know, in terms of, you know, whether there be a FIFA license, as it were, in terms of World Rugby license. You know, that could be something that might happen, it might not, because obviously, from my point of view, I'm able to work in the UK in terms of deals over the line. I deal with the clubs in France,
yeah,
but I work with partners there to finalise those deals, and we're all over in Italy and South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, where we've got players as well. So, but it'd be interesting to see whether that might happen. Now, it might not, but it might happen in the years to come, where you have a World Rugby license that allows you to, you know, work with every club.
Excellent.
In terms of signing off final deal.
And something which you'd like the agency market to stop doing or do less of?
It's a good question. I think, and this is nothing against any other agent, because we've all got our jobs to do and work very hard for our players, I guess. But perhaps be a little bit more honest.
Yeah.
And a bit more transparent. And because I think as a player, I think that's what you need to have.
Mm.
And that's not bigging me up as an individual, but it's something that I do offer all my players. Is I'll tell you exactly how it is, and I'll in the most positive way, by the way, because that's the way I'm as a person, individual. But I think if we can kind of get away from the sort of situation that does happen, where some agents will say to your client, "Oh, I can do this, this, and this," when actually they can't, or perhaps, you know, might not fulfil. And sell a dream, as it were. But I think in an ideal world, JB, is what I'm trying to say, because we don't live in a perfect world, it could make things a lot more fluid.
Right, well, if you're an aspiring player and you want to sign up or say hello, where can we find you on social media, Tom?
You've got the Twitter handle, which is my personal one, Tom D Beattie. That's BEATTIE. So Tom D Beattie, and the company Twitter handle is TDB_sports. And also on Facebook, you can contact us and reach out to us at TDB Sports-Representation with Integrity.
Fantastic! Right, everyone, go. Sign up there, visit it, follow it, say hello, all those other great things. Tom, you've been an absolutely magnificent guest, and we'll definitely have to have you on again soon.
JB, checks in the post. Thanks, mate.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.